We're in the middle of Mitzvah Kuf Samech Tes 169, talking about the Tumah, the ritual impurity of Tsaras, the divine skin affliction, which is not necessarily known as any particular medical condition nowadays. And by the way, that book I was talking about came, so now we have these lovely pictures. If you'd like to take turns flipping through, we have pictures of white skin diseases that perhaps resemble resembled Tsaras, and has pictures also of egg skins and snow eggs, like the membrane from inside of an egg, and has pictures of wool and things like that, so you know exactly what types of shades of white are a problem of Tsaras. But it's funny that that book doesn't seem to be published by any normal publishing company. It's sort of self-published, but it seems to be, you know, going in the right direction. So if he had just made it more official, it probably would have been better.
Sometimes it's just hard to get funding because people just aren't interested.
Maybe.
And
I don't know.
Is interesting as Tsaras today.
That's not necessarily true. It could be there's such thing as it. But the question we'll discuss in a minute, if we have a halacha that we can actually paskin if somebody has Tsaras, if the Kohen can actually tell you if you have Tsaras or not. It's a good question. Okay. So we were finished discussing last time the size that Tsaras must be, which is like a gris, and that if you have this affliction, then you get put away, you get quarantined for 7 days. And if it grows or it develops something that's absolutely tamei, then you're declared tamei after the quarantine. And or if it has those hairs in the middle, or if it has... healthy skin in the middle of the affliction the size of a squared off lentil, then that's also considered to be a sign of absolute tumah. So whether it has this in the beginning or after the quarantine, then you're considered to be an absolute, what we call a mitzora mukhlat, an absolutely declared mitzora, and that has different halachos as we will be discussing in a couple mitzvos from now. So, v'dinei nigei harosh v'hazakan, now he's introducing a new category of nigayim. Before, we learned if it's in the skin and it's white of a certain shade, then it's called tsaras. But there's a different halacha if this affliction appears in the head, like the hairy part of the head, or if it appears in the beard. And it's interesting that Minchas Chinuch points out that this applies even if a woman has a beard. So it's not normally in halacha. Obviously, a woman has hair on her head, but if a woman happens to have a beard, then this could apply as well. And even if there's someone, say, a eunuch, like a male who does not normally develop a beard, so then this would also apply. Any facial hair would be considered to be subject to these problems of a nesek. Which is unusual, because normally when women have facial hair, so it doesn't have the halacha of facial hair, and there, for example, women are allowed to shave with a razor if they have facial hair. So it's not, as opposed to a man, is not allowed to shave with a razor. So it's here this actually does have the halacha of actual hair, for the same as a man. V'inyano shehu nefilas ha-sear shebehem me'ikaro v'yishoyer makom panui. So there'll be a patch of hair, that a patch of skin that is hairless in an area that's normally hairy, that's surrounded by hair, but the hair has fallen out in this particular place. Vizehu nesek. This is called a nesek, which is a different name from a nega, or a regular tsaras type of affliction. Ve nesek pachos mikagris. And the same shear applies, that it has to be a gris in size before it's considered to be a problem of tsaras, that the hair has to fall out on this size of skin. And there's a difference in the Rishonim. The Rambam writes that that's the only sign of a nesek, is hair falling out, whereas the Ravid brings that it seems to be a difference of opinion between the Tosefta, which is a compilation of Tanaitic material designed to supplement and explain the Mishnah. The Tosefta seems to indicate that the skin has to change color by a nesek, the same way it has to change color for a regular skin affliction, which has nothing to do with hair falling out. But he says that the Torah's Kohanim, the halachic medrash on Sefer Vayikra, which the commentators point out seems to be more authoritative and accords with the opinion of the Rambam, is that there is no requirement for any change in skin tone or anything like that. As long as the hair is falling out in these places where it should not normally be falling out, then it would be a problem of tsaras. You see this sometimes. People have they have patches. My cousin had this, that patches of skin. He had like a few patches of skin in his beard that just didn't have hair. The hair, it was that like that way for a few months, then it grew back. It's I forget the exact name of the condition, but yeah, I saw one of my friends just had it the other day. I said, "Oh, do you have psoriasis or something?"
He said, Is it treatable, or does it just go away?
I think they gave him something for it, but it's not very treatable. It just lasts for a little while and then it goes away. It's a random, strange type of thing that the hair just falls out. But you see, sometimes people have hair falling out. You know, this might be what the Torah is talking about in terms of tsaras. V'dinei keitzad megalchinosa. How do you shave it? In other words, to determine whether it spreads or not, which we'll discuss actually more about in the following mitzvah. We'll give the details about that. V'simanei tumaso v'taharaso. So how do you know if the hair falling out patch is tamei or tahor? So if it has a, again, it has to be with a size, it has to go be with the, or if there is a, there are two yellow hairs growing in this area where normally there's dark hair, there are two yellow hairs growing in it, then that would be a problem that you would declare him immediately that this is a problem of an esek. And or if it spreads, that would also be considered to be a first problem of an esek. But again, the difference would be whether you have to quarantine this person or not. V'din, Masha Amru, Shehakol Mistamin Banagoyim, that every single person has the potential to become tamei due to tzaras. Da'afilu katan ben yomo. Even a baby on the day that it is born can develop tzaras. However, one second, there is a caveat to this, that it cannot have come out. It cannot be born with a tzaras, that if it's born with a tzaras, that does not count. You ignore that. It has to be that it developed the tzaras after it was born. Or, if the tzaras changed color after it was born, even though it was born with some sort of whiteness, even if it changed to a different forbidden color, then that would also be a problem of tzaras, even on a newborn baby, yeah?
Doesn't you assume that it was like the mother's or the father's sin?
Possibly, when the baby is that young. Maybe it's reflecting the mother's or father's sin, trying to teach them a lesson, yeah?
The baby can't possibly have spoken on Lashon Hara.
Thank you.
Correct. Yeah. Maybe it was Chutzpah Dikta Malach that was teaching it Torah in the womb. It talked back to the teacher, yeah?
The parents. Obviously.
What?
The parents can be quarantined with the baby.
Yeah, the baby doesn't have to be alone. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we'll
no,
see.
Usually with Sarah, you are. No, like isn't that?
No, you don't have to be mamish alone. No. It's not that you can't. No. We'll see. We'll see in a few minutes what the story is when somebody has Sarah. The ha'avadim, that if there are slaves, of course we know that slaves avalo goyim velo ger toshav, so not non-Jews. So total non-Jews do not have the problem of tzaras. Even if they develop white things on their skin that look like tzaras, they do not have this halacha at all. It's not halachically considered to be tzaras. We know that on a deraisa level, a non-Jew cannot become tamei. That only the whole Torah of Tuma and Tahara only refers to Jews. So if a goy is in the presence of a dead body, doesn't become tamei, there's no problem that he can go into the base of whatever part of the base of Mikdash he can and offer his korbanos, whatever. There's no problem of Tuma and Tahara at all by a goyim. However, derabanan, they were gozer, they made a decree that we should treat non-Jews as if they have the tumma of a zav, that somebody who is having an abnormal emission, another way to try to keep away and not develop too close contact. Again, that's not really relevant nowadays, but at the Raisa level, a non-Jew cannot become tamei or tahor at all. There's no, not relevant to them at all. And even a ger toshav, what's a ger toshav? A ger toshav is somebody who does not fully convert to Judaism, but he wants to live in Eretz Yisrael. He says, yeah, I love the Jews. I'm going to observe all the seven commandments of B'nai Noach. I believe in God. I believe that the Jewish people have the Torah. They have they know what's going on. But I'm not Jewish. I was born a non-Jew, so I don't have to become Jewish. There's no obligation whatsoever. I don't want to become Jewish, but I believe in the Jewish religion. So that's those types of people we are commanded to support them in their endeavors and make sure they have a good life and they can live in Eretz Yisrael and things like that, even though they're not fully Jewish. Again, that's opposed to a Ger Tzedek, a convert, a non-Jew who decides he wants to become, he or she wants to become fully Jewish, which is obviously then once they're Jewish, then they have the problem of Tzaras and they can get the Tumah of Tzaras and of course any other type of Tumah. But even slaves, so we know slaves are also a sort of intermediate category. That slaves, when you purchase a non-Jewish slave, then you immerse the slave in the mikvah, And the mikvah, and that's a semi-conversion, that the slave doesn't become a full Jewish free person, but the slave is obligated in the same mitzvos as a woman, that they're obligated in all negative commandments. They have to keep Shabbos, of course, you're responsible for them keeping Shabbos, ato bincha, v'avdecha, v'mascha. And they keep the positive commandments that are not time bound. They don't have to wear tzitzis and tefillin, and they don't have to sit in sukkah and things like that. The same as a woman, because they're busy serving you. They don't have time to put on tefillin. They have to be cooking, and they have to be tying your shoes and whatever else you want them to do.
They're supposed to tie your shoes.
So, but the slaves, non-Jewish slaves, who are purchased by a Jewish owner, and they once they go to the mikvah, they have some sort of Jewish status, even though they're not free, and if the owner wants to free them, whether you're allowed to do that or not is a different question, but if the owner wants to free them, then it's less of a jump for them to become fully Jewish free people, but they are sort of Jewish, so therefore they do have Tumah and Tara, and things like that, yeah?
Evid Kanani,
he's talking about Evid Kanani,
yeah. Do they have a choice about converting? In other words, can you make him convert? I mean, or half convert?
If you purchase a non-Jewish slave, then they have to do this semi-conversion within a certain period of time. Otherwise, they have to go back to the non-Jewish owner. You cannot own a non-Jewish slave who's completely 100% not Jewish. Yeah. What?
I mean, if there's probably a reason for this, that's the thinking.
You don't want a czar so close in your house. You don't want your kid's nanny.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want the kid's nanny or whatever. Right. Mammy.
I mean, it's also considered your responsibility for them, that once they're your slave, you're responsible that they act as proper people. That even if they're not fully Jewish, then it's 100% your responsibility. You hate to make this comparison because one's a human being, one's not, but you're not allowed to have your animal do malacha for you on Shabbos either. That if you have if you own a donkey or a horse, so you can have it walk outside in the street on Shabbos, you know, with a load on its back or something like that. It's carrying. That's a malacha. What's up? Okay, nowadays we don't have slaves anymore. We're not allowed. Our wonderful country, which is celebrating the independence of yesterday, does not allow us to own slaves, so therefore we don't do that. We don't do that anymore, and it's not considered something that most people want to enter into, so we don't do slavery anymore. But we should be aware of the halachos that there is an institution that the Torah does allow slavery under certain circumstances. Of course, you have to treat them very well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll learn more about the halachos when we come into, let's say, Brechenek when it talks about it. Yeah?
This is a total sidetrack. You're talking about not freeing them, but weren't a lot of slaves, servants, whatever, weren't they? They were basically sold into slavery because of their debts, and it does talk about letting them go at the end of the.
That's Jewish slaves.
Yeah,
there's a difference between Tavi, you know.
Right, there's a story in the Gemara that one of the Tanoim. Oh, Tavi! No. Tavi was he died as a non-Jewish slave.
Oh, wait a minute! I thought they needed him for a minion.
No, that was a different one. That was somebody else who freed a slave. There was okay. So there, if there's another mitzvah that you need to free your slave for, okay, so maybe you're allowed. That's the thing. Tavi, no, that's what it says in the Mishnah and Brachos. It says that, was it Rabbi Gamliel, I think. Rabbi Gamliel, I think, yeah, Tavi was a slave of Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel received comfort from other people when Tavi died, his slave. So his students asked him, Rabbi, you receive comfort like these things, like a sitting shiva type of activities when your slave dies. That's not appropriate. He says, no. Tavi was he was a great slave, he was amazing, so there's different it's based on a series. He also says over there that he bathed on the right after his wife died. So it says, Rebbe, you taught us that when you're in mourning you're not allowed to bathe. So he says, no, I'm an istinus, I'm frail, I can't go so long without washing, so I'm different. This is a part of the whole thing, and that's why nowadays. Part of the source for nowadays why we're more lenient about the halachos of washing during mourning periods, including the 9 days, including during Avelis when you're sitting Shiva, because nowadays everybody's an istinus, that we all shower much more frequently than they used to do in the olden days. So when you're just showering in order, you know, not with hot water, you know, just in the shower, just luxuriating, having the water cascade over you and, you know, having a good time. But if you just take a quick shower to get the dirt off, then that is considered to be, by most poskim. So that's how we assume, but that's what we assume to be permissible. Anyway, so with the Havadim over here is talking, when it says regular Havadim, it normally is talking about non-Jewish slave, what we call an Eved Kenani, because a Jewish slave is chayv in every mitzvah. A Jewish slave is still Jewish, completely born Jewish. There's no change in status when he becomes a slave. V'din ma sh'amru sh'akol k'sherim liros ha'negoyim, that everybody can view the negayim. In other words, aval tuma v'tara tluya b'yad kohen, that anybody could look at the nega. So, for example, let's say there's a kohen who just graduated from kohen school and he doesn't know all the halachos of
tzara. He's an apprentice kohen.
Right, he doesn't know all of the halachos so well yet, so he has to have an internship to learn the rest of the halachos. So the kohen, it's funny because the kohen is going to go, this little pishurka, 18-year-old kohen, is going to go to a rabbi with a long white beard and a langa rekel, and he's going to be sitting there looking at the maris of the negayim, and he's going, the big rabbi is going to say, you know, this is tohar, this is tamei, this is good, this is no good. But the little kohen is going to be the one to declare him actually tahor and tamei. So in other words, the rabbi is going to tell him, yeah, this one is no good, this is good. So based on the recommendation of the rabbi who knows the halacha, so the kohen is going to say tahor and tamei, but it's really the little kohen who's affecting the status, who's effectuating the status of tahor and tamei.
As it were, sacramental.
Like, yeah, it's sacramental,
because,
yeah.
It's like, because, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly, 100%.
As it were.
Ketzad, Kohen Shemir, the Aliros, the Kohen does no Chacham Yisrael, Reyo, Ve'omer, Lo, the Kohen, and Mortame, who Omer Tame, again, the rabbi can tell him what to do. Omer Torah, Ve'omer Torah. Ve'yesa, Rube, Prateha, Mivoarim, Ve'maseches, Negoim. Of course, the place to find the halachos of Tzoras is in the tractate of the Mishnah and the Tosefta, which is known as Maseches Negoim. Of course, by the way, we have, it talks about in the Torah that if all the hair of your head disappears, it's not tzaras. It has to be surrounded by hair. It has to be, by hair that remains. That if somebody is just going bald, then that's not karacha. So that's what it says in the Torah that that's tahor. Yeah,
the skin color doesn't change when you're just losing it and getting bald.
But that's only the Ravid who's quoting the Tosefta. According to the Rambam, the skin color doesn't need to change at all when you have a nesek, when you have the hair falling off. Type of thing. That is just it's only hair falling off. V'nohagin dinei tzaras bizcharim unikevos. The halachos for tzaras are equivalent to men and women. There's absolutely no difference whatsoever. B'chol zman sheyiyu lanu kohanim bikiin roim osam. That the halachos of tzaras are applicable in any time when you have kohanim who are knowledgeable about the laws, who can see the negayim, yeah? Right, that's true. That's true. 100%. Yeah. But the problem over there also is, that's the way it appears from the words of the Rambam.
Isn't it true that it's assumed that today no Kohen is really a Kohen? You really know for sure.
Excellent, excellent point. That the post can point out that it's really not possible to look at Saras nowadays because all the Kohanim that we have are what we call Kohani Chazoka. That we only have a Kohen that the assumption is they're Kohanim because their father told him he was a Kohen and his father and his father and his father, etc. And then you look back and you see the hands on the tombstones, etc.
Right. That could have been from a faulty tradition also.
You can't prove with DNA.
There is a gene. There is something called the Cohen modal haplotype that is on the Y chromosome, actually, that I think like very high percentage, that 80% of people who say they're Kohanim actually have this gene, but again, what, you're going to exclude the 20% that don't have this gene because of, I don't know, it's
and
not.
And you can have Goyim that have that gene too.
There are Goyim
for
that
sure,
have the gene also, yeah.
Right. In South Africa that has that gene.
Right, so again, the exact reliability of this gene, we still have to, we don't know, but when Eliyahu Hanavi comes, so he's going to tell us which Kohanim are real Kohanim, which Kohanim are not. But for these purposes, to look at Saras, it's true that you really need a Kohen. It's called a Kohen Meyuchas. What's a Kohen Meyuchas? Yeah. That a Kohen Meyuchas.
Saras specialty?
No, it's a Kohen. That there's testimony. Right, has a Yichus. There's a testimony that his father's father's father, you can trace directly back. You have actual testimony that that ancestor worshipped in the Beis HaMikdash.
How can you
nowadays. Mm-hmm. There are none. That you only have Kohane Chazaka. What?
There's none.
No one. No.
How could there be?
It's the main problem is the only time nowadays where you really, really need a Kohen is Pidyon HaBen. That when you have the redemption of the firstborn son, then you really need a Kohen, but we have no choice. That the poskim say that we rely on the chazaka because there's no other option. That's the best we can do.
It's better than not doing it at all.
Right. The Vilna Gaon used to redeem him. His father redeemed him when he was 30 days old. But the Vilna Gaon, whenever he, but it doesn't have to be your father. You can redeem yourself too. Anybody.
I know somebody who did that. BT. He realized he was, he had never had a opinion.
Oh, good.
So he,
very nice. No, you give the Kohen. You give the Kohen money as opposed to the father giving the Kohen money. So the Vilna Gaon, when he grew up, he used to give 5 sloim, which is the amount of Pidyon HaBen, the money required for Pidyon HaBen, to every Kohen he would meet, because maybe this one is a real Kohen and the Kohen that his father used was not a real, real Kohen. And then it says that he, one time he met a Kohen who was had the last name of Rappaport. And apparently they had some sort of records that they had very good yichus, very good records about their yichus. So once he was redeemed himself with a Rappaport, then he stopped being redeeming himself with every Kohen he met after that point. So that's why a lot of times for Pidyon HaBen nowadays, people try to get a Kohen who has the last name of Rappaport. So you need a Kohen Meyuchas to see the tzaras. Therefore, practically speaking, we do not have the halachos of tzaras nowadays, even though technically, if you have a white affliction, it could really be tzaras, but you have no mechanism to declare a tummy. Again, if you just look at your skin and you say, oh, that looks like tzaras, that's ineffectual, that's nothing. The declaration of the Kohen creates the tumah. That is the start of the tumah. That's like where the Torah tells you explicitly that when we're going to learn in a few mitzvos about the tzaras that can afflict the house, that it doesn't just afflict the body of a person, it could afflict the house as well. So it says that before the Kohen declares the house tameh, you're supposed to take out all the stuff from the house so that all the furniture and all these things should not become tameh. So that's in other words, just because it's there, it exists. It's the declaration of the Kohen that it's tameh creates it, makes it tameh. So nowadays, again, it's not going to be tummy because there's no Kohen that declared a tummy. You have a mitzvah that if you have something you suspect to be tzaras, you have to go to a Kohen and your Kohen has to examine it. But here you can't because there's no Kohen miyucha. So therefore, practically speaking, there's no tzaras nowadays, even though there's nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash or Eretz Yisrael or anything. It's applicable in all places and all times, at least in theory. What? So the Kohen is not allowed. A Kohen, of course, also cannot be a cholol. A Kohen who was born from a father who was a Kohen and a woman that his father was not allowed to marry is called a cholol. So if the Kohen marries a divorced woman, for example, then the child is a cholol. Also, if the Kohen is blind in one eye, the Kohen cannot see the Nagoyim because he has to have full sight in order to process the information of the color.
If
and
you've got only one eye, you don't have 3D vision.
Right, to see that it's amok. You have to see that the tzaras looks like it's deeper than the rest of the skin. Right. So that you need your full visual faculties. It also said, what? Amum, now that you brought Amum, actually, that a Kohen even with Amum, what? That a Kohen, that's only in terms of worship in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen not having a mum. You're allowed to, a Kohen with a mum is allowed to see Nagoyim, is allowed to do, it's only for the only reason, the mum doesn't affect his Kohanic status, only affects his ability to do worship in the Beis HaMikdash.
He's still a Kohen with the cemeteries and the...
Absolutely, 100%. The Minchas Chinuch points out as well that an uncircumcised Kohen is also kosher to see the Negaim. Yeah, so in other words, an uncircumcised Kohen is not allowed to eat truma, even if he's allowed to be uncircumcised at the time. Like, let's say there's a pikuach nefesh type of thing, like that he's a hemophiliac or some other condition that prevents him from being circumcised, so he has a, it's allowed. He's not obviously, if he doesn't want to be circumcised, then he just decided he doesn't feel like observing that mitzvah, that he's probably puzzled for other reasons, because he's not the kosher Jew in terms of his way he views the world, then he's still allowed to look at the Negoim, even though he's not allowed to eat the Truma. It also says, by the way, that you only look at the Negoim in the middle of the day when the light is, I'm sorry, a couple hours removed from the middle of the day on either direction, because that's when the light is strong but not too strong, and therefore you're going to be able to see the colors more accurately. We're going to see that when a mitzorah becomes purified, so he has to bring a sacrifice. So it's like we saw that about the other mitzvahs, like for a yoledes, a woman who gave birth, that she's still allowed to give birth, even though she can't bring the korban associated with it nowadays. She just writes in her little book that she owes one or two or three or four or five or six or 15 korbanos, whatever, however many times she gave birth, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. But in any event, so it's the same thing. So it doesn't preclude you from having tzaras. You could still have tzaras. You just can't complete the purification totally until you can bring a korban. And that's, but if you had a Kohen Meyuchas who could look at your tzaras and declare that it really is tzaras, then you would have to observe all the halachos, even though you can't bring the korban nowadays. The chol mishen it's tara velo hisnaig al piat tara ksuva b'metzara. If you got tzaras and you did not act accordingly, elashon lokach adavar b'derech mikra, you said, oh, this white patch on my skin is probably just going to go away. No problem. Lo chash lavo el kohen laroselo. You don't go to the kohen to show it. Again, you will still be tahor. Good for you. You won't be. But you'll violate the mitzvah. You violate the mitzvah.
Well, it wasn't, but it wasn't.
So bitel aseizes. You violated
the kohen said so. So why should you go to the
kohen? Your obligation is to go to the kohen, but it's not the tumah doesn't start until the kohen declares the tumah. Umina domesh yeoncho shetidbak bo tzaras laolam. So your punishment will be that you'll never be able to become purified. You're going to have this weird skin affliction. It's going to spread and spread and spread. And they'll want to have anything to do with you just by looking at you, even though you won't technically be tameh. Well, tovim yetiv Hashem v'yirape. That is, the people who are responsible and do their religious duty by going to the kohen to have him look at the tzaras, that God will eventually heal once you, again, we talked about the Mishor Shea Mitzvah, that you're going to come to the realization of what you did wrong and you're going to change, and therefore God's going to heal you. But if you never come to the realization of what you did wrong, you don't go to the Kohen to have the Tzaras ritual performed, then you will just continue to waste away in your illness, yeah?
But it wouldn't be asar for like a dermatologist to treat you.
It could be, yeah. Why? It could be asar for a dermatologist to treat you, yeah. Why? Even not. If you have something that you suspect to be tzaras, you're not allowed to remove it from your body. That's we're gonna talk about that in a few minutes. Uchvar kasavti lemala. I wrote above in Seder b'yom hashmini b'tumah shmona shratzi mitzvah dalet shaharamban zichrono levracha lo yimna becheshva mitzvos dini hatumas kulon. So the Ramban does not count it as a mitzvah to act in accordance with the tumah of tzaras, because he just says that. What's the mitzvah? To treat someone who's tamei as tamei, and to treat someone who's tar as tar. What are all the details? They're not separate mitzvahs. Those are just details within that one gigantic mitzvah of treating people who are tamei and tar accordingly. Kegon tumas nevelos yeshrotzim v'ochlen umashkin of a dead animal and all these types of tuma, nida violedes, menstruating woman, a woman who's given birth, zava and zav and the abnormal emissions, shechvazera, seminal emissions, tzaras adam abayis ubegin, the types of tzaras that have to do with a person's body and a house and a garment, v'tumas meis, v'tumas mei nida v'tarasa, and that the tuma of a dead body and the purification waters. That the Ramban, as we know, the Sefer HaChinuch most of the time really agrees with the Ramban, but nevertheless, that we're not going to depart from the reckoning of the Ramban because he's the most organized and he wrote the Sefer Mitzvahs first. So we're going to follow his account when we explain all the mitzvahs. Mitzvah Kuf Ayin, 170. Shelo legaleach se'ar hanesek. That you should remember what a nesek is. A nesek is a type of tzaras that's the hair falling out as opposed to the skin changing color. So you're not supposed to shave the hairs that grow within the hairless area. Meaning the yellow hairs. Obviously there's no black hair within the nesek, otherwise the dark hair would not render it a nesek. Shelulgalech sar hanesek, one should not shave the hair of the nesek. Shenemar vesa nesek lo yigalech, you should not shave the nesek. So it's Farish in the Torah. Kolomar oso sear shal makom hanesek lo yigalech, you cannot shave the hairs that are growing on the nesek, the yellow hairs. Lashon Sifra says, minayin letolesh simani tuma mitoch nisko she'over belosase. So, even if you pluck hairs that are growing within the nesek, you are violating the negative commandment. She'emar v'esa nesek lo yigaleach. Beinin kedei she'yakir ha'kohen simani atuma besayra. So, obviously, if you have to make it possible for the kohen to determine whether you really have tzaraz or not, and if you go ahead and remove the yellow hairs from inside the nesek, then you have a problem, and the kohen is not going to be able to determine whether you really have tzaraz or not. Mishorshia mitzvah, the reasoning for the mitzvah is as follows. Lirmos yisbol kol adam eze tzahar ve'eze onesh she'yani shehu Hashem baruch hu velo yivat bahem. The reasoning for the mitzvah is that when God wants to punish you for something, you should accept the punishment and the atonement that it provides, as opposed to trying to remove it. It doesn't mean if you have a headache, you shouldn't take medication because you want extra atonement and you're for the headache. It just means that here there's a specific idea that we know that tzaras is a direct divine punishment that actually means you did something wrong. So if you don't recognize that and you just say, no, I don't want this punishment, that misses the whole purpose of the tzaras b'chlal. It was just funny to remind, someone was telling us at lunch yesterday, there's a different, just a cute story, but difference of attitude between two great rabbis currently living in Israel. That one of the rabbis, it says, when he goes to the dentist, he tells the dentist, I don't want any Novocaine because I don't want to, I want to suffer in this world so I get more reward in the world to come. So then the other rabbi has a different approach. He says, give me a lot so I don't have any Bittul Torah.
All right.
So we have different approaches on that. Okay.
God made the Novocaine.
Ve'al yachshov sheyia yecholas biyadu levatal osam halima min habrio. So don't think that you have the possibility to ignore all these punishments. Ragesh levakesh trina. Really, you got to daven to God. Meisakel baruch hu shirape machatz michvosav. That you should daven to God that God should heal you and you should learn your lesson from your punishment. You're going to learn in a while from now in mitzvah Tuf Kuf Pei Dalet 684. That's a while from now. It's all the way in Sefer Dvarim towards the end of the Torah, where it says, Hishomer benega tzaras, that be careful about the tzaras. So Chazal learned that when it says be careful about the tzaras, it means that you're not allowed to chop off something that's tzaras from your skin. That's why we have the problem of the dermatologist, that if the dermatologist chops off tzaras, so he could have a problem.
But we don't have this today anyway.
So yeah, but we know that something is likely to be tzaras. And we don't, here it says clearly that the Kohen has to have this information. You give the Kohen the information to... that you cannot pluck the yellow hairs because the Kohen has to know whether to declare you Tamir Tahor.
We don't have this whole Kohen thing today anyway, so what's the
That's
point?
A good point, but it's a separate, what we call Xeris HaKosev, that it's the Torah declares that you're not allowed to do this. Well, that's Pikuach Nefesh, that's a different
right,
story.
That's what I mean, so you could say that this is going to be...
So I'm not talking about if you have something serious. You suspect to be skin cancer. I don't think skin cancer is white, but...
Listen, I know people who had some big surprises about some skin conditions.
You can definitely go to a dermatologist to look at it. That's not what we've been discussing. You can certainly go to a dermatologist to look at your thing if it's a serious disease. So, of course, then it's pikuach nefesh. Then, of course, he has to remove it. That's not the question.
If you see something on your skin, okay,
yeah,
which you suspect looks like tzaras, okay,
yeah,
then unless it is something which is, you know, you're worried might be pikuach nefesh, it might be like... then you can't go to Kohen because there isn't one.
Right.
All right. You just basically have to let it sit there until Mashiach comes, and then we'll be all
right. Correct. Yeah, 100%. Midine HaMitzvah, as an interesting exception, by the way, when we have an issue of Asei Doche Lo Sasei, that sometimes there'll be a positive commandment that will override the issue of removing tzaraas. So, for example, the famous cases, again, we learned that a baby could contract tzaraas on the day it's born. So what happens if that tzaraas happens to be on the foreskin? You can, because it's a seido chalosa say that a positive commandment overrides a negative commandment, so ordinarily you're not allowed to remove the tzaraas from your body, but if the tzaraas is on the foreskin, then you go ahead with the bris in a normal manner. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, okay. Midine ha-mitzvah, the lechos are as follows. Amr zichronim libracha. Ketzad megalchin es hanesek. How do you shave the nesek? In order, again, we're trying to determine, because either the nesek has yellow hairs growing in it, or it spreads. Those are the two ways that you know that the nesek is for sure tamei. Megaleach chutzalo maniach lo shtei saros amachlo. You shave around the nesek, and you leave a ring of two hairs on the circumference of the nesek. And that way, what if you go to check the kohen, if those hairs are gone, you know that it spread. And if those hairs are still there, you know that it didn't spread. That anybody could shave around the nesek. That you should shave the nesek. It doesn't have to be the kohen doing it. It doesn't have to be a razor.
Oh. But
this tiglachas, this shaving doesn't have to be with a razor.
But the other shaving does, but the
So now we're switching gears for a second. We're talking about the impermissible type of shaving, which is on the surface of the nesek itself. Then that has to be with a razor. You're not chayev, you're not supposed to do it, but you don't receive the penalty of lashes unless you do the shaving with an actual razor. Again, this is actually subject to a difference of opinion amongst the Rishonim. Again, it's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Ravid says that you're you're chayev on everything. That even if you pull it out, again, clearly from we saw before at the beginning that the Toras Kohanim, the Sifra, says that even pulling out is a problem. But the question is whether you're chayev malchus for that as well. According to the Rambam, it's only if you shave with an actual razor. Where else would it be explained? But Maseches Negayim. Benoheges Bischar Munikevos. It's in all places and all times, the males and females. So what does this mean? How could he say that it's only in the time when you have a Kohen to see the Negayim? For in terms of this mitzvah, that you're not allowed to shave the Nesek, is only applicable after the Kohen saw you once. So the Kohen saw you. There was no yellow hair at the time, so he's gonna shave around the nesek to determine whether it's either gonna spread or develop white or yellow hairs, which would cause him to declare you tamei. So during the time that you're quarantined, again, this is the first quarantine for the nesek. After the kohen has said that you are tamei. That you're going to be quarantined, so therefore then this starts to apply. But before, if you just have something, the Kohen hasn't looked at you at all, so the beard thing is not applicable at all, apparently. It says in mitzvah, when it talks about Hishamar b'nega tzaraas, you're not allowed to chop off the tzaraas from your body, not the nesek, but the actual white skin from your body. So he says it's applicable in all places and all times. And the Kli Chemda, as he quotes in these notes over here, so here it has to be recognizable whether it spreads or not, which is only applicable once he goes to see the Kohen, but because the issue is it going to develop or not? So here there's no sign in your skin that you're tamei. In other words, just the lack of hair, so it could just be hair falling out. We have to see whether it's going to spread or develop yellow hair or something. So therefore, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that it's only applicable once you've seen the Kohen, because he has to declare, oh, there might be a problem over here. Here, we're going to leave the ring of two hairs around the nesek, around the patch, the hairless patch in your head or beard, and we're going to see if it spreads or not. So at that point, there's the problem of shaving, either if there's white, yellow hairs that come up, or if any part, if you want to shave Again, it doesn't help you to shave these hairs, so you can't tell whether it's spread or not. I mean, it does help you, I guess. You see, Cohen can't tell, but then you have a problem. You can't shave this ring of hair either. So that's why it's applicable only after the Kohen saw you, specifically by a Nesek. But the Kli Chemda says that cutting off something that's active, you see that you have a white patch on your skin. When there's something that actually is changed in your skin, so that's applicable even nowadays before you even see a Kohen at all, because you would have reason to suspect by yourself that this might be Tzaras. And as far as I